Omaha Public Radio presents another program from the Durham Museum Lecture Series on Noon Forum. We'll hear a special program commemorating the assassination of Abraham Lincoln 150 years ago. President Lincoln will be portrayed by Fritz Klein, the nation's foremost Lincoln interpreter, presenting a one-act play entitled The Last Full Measure. Set in Ford's Theater, moments after he has been shot by John Wilkes Booth, Lincoln reflects on his life's accomplishments, challenges, and what he hopes for the future of the country. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, April 14, 2015, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Durham Museum, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Mick Hale, Director of Education at the Durham Museum.
We are featuring tonight one of our outreach programs that we're very, very proud of. And it's our Durham Scholars in Residence. And we do have some of our supporters and sponsors here this evening. The program is sponsored by Carol Gendler, the Sonny Durham Family Foundation, Lincoln Financial Foundation, Woodmen of the World, and the A-Si Dog Charitable Trust. Special support of Mr. Klein's visit is provided by Robert and Carol Julian. Please join me in thanking these folks who are supporting this great program. This program, kind of in the format that we do, has been around since 2009. And a couple of facts, and then I'm going to share with you a very quick story about this program. Basically, what this program is, the last 2 days, for example, we have taken Mr. Klein out to schools in the greater Omaha area. Tomorrow we'll do 3 schools in Omaha, a couple elementary schools, a private school, middle school in Bellevue. And then on Thursday we'll do our Western Iowa tour. We will go to Glenwood, Trainer, and of course we'll make our last stop at Council Bluffs Abraham Lincoln High School. And this week we'll do, probably all told, there will be about 9 sessions and roughly 3,500 kids will get a chance to see Mr. Klein. Over the years since 2009, this program we've gotten out to the schools, we've been in front of more than 35,000 students. There have been 29 K-12 school districts in both Nebraska and Iowa. We've done presentations for 5 colleges and universities. We've had noted national scholars. We've had local scholars with national reputations. I real quick wanted to share a story about one that we had a couple years ago. And I don't know, some of you maybe got a chance to meet Minnie Jean Brown Trickey. Anybody know Minnie Jean Brown Trickey? Know the name? Minnie Jean was one of the Little Rock Nine. In 1957, one of 17-year-old African-American students that went to Little Rock Central High School and desegregated that school. And we were very fortunate to have Minnie Jean come and do a program similar to what Mr. Klein's doing. And we had we went to four locations. We did one at Metro and had a couple of OPS high schools and some community groups join us there on Metro's campus. We went to Omaha Central High School. We went to Council Bluffs and did a program at Thomas Jefferson. And this picture here was taken at Millard South, and it is, we figure, 1,000 kids. And all 3 Millard high schools, Millard North, South, and West, were in attendance. The former school board president, then city council member Gene Stothert, introduced her. All the administration at Millard was there, as well as some other folks in surrounding districts. And I didn't see this picture till like 2 days after. And I sat there and I looked at this picture, and this was kind of one of those game-changer moments. And I looked at this picture and I started seeing the layers of opportunity that existed in this photo. And you'd sit there and you look first at one person telling their story to 1,000 people. And then you sit there and look, one 75-year-old person telling their story of when they were their age and what they were going through. And then you peel back another layer, and it's an African-American woman telling a predominantly white audience what she had to deal with. And I sat there and I thought, God, I hope they got it. I hope they got it. And the next picture, a standing ovation. And when we do the programs, I don't very often get the chance to really see it. So I was kind of seeing it 2 days later. And I kind of went, okay, hopefully they're not just being polite. And then the next photo I saw, they got it. It's that moment that honestly, when I get to introduce myself and I say I get to be the director of education here, these are the moments that you know we get to be a part of to provide students and people throughout the community. And it wouldn't happen with the great support we get from it. It wouldn't happen if the schools didn't want this kind of programming. It wouldn't happen if the kids didn't want this programming. Because again, this was that moment when you see it 2 days later, you're just like, wow, thank you. And so we're very, very proud of this program. And we've had lots of experiences like that. But again, that was a series of photos that really kind of got to me with that. So I do want to show one photo real quick of today. This is kind of a setup selfie, if you will. The administration out at Millard South, we took Fritz out there today, excuse me, and they thought it'd be great to get him set up to kind of show the kids behind him there, and they had a great time, and Fritz did a great job with them, so it'll be a fun program tonight. Real quick, I do have a couple of housekeeping things before I get you set up on tonight. Tonight's performance isn't what we've been doing in the schools. The schools is a little bit different, but it's a dramatic performance. It's kind of a one-time type deal, or at least here it is. We're not doing it anywhere else other than here this evening. The theater will be pretty dark. The lecture hall will be pretty dark this evening, so please be careful if you do need to leave for any reason during the presentation. It's about 40, 45 minutes. And then I will also give you a little bit of a heads up. The play will start with a gunshot. So just be prepared for that. You'll know the ending, trust me. But be ready for that initial thing. And there also will be some Q&A following the presentation, as well as a dessert reception, which might be there or not. I may sneak up. So just to kind of set the stage for you a little bit, and we shared this with the students today, and this is kind of why this is so unique and so special today. But if you were to go back 150 years ago, this very moment, Abraham Lincoln was doing his best to get out of the White House, to leave the White House, what would be for the last time. He was eagerly trying to wrap up his day's business, had very much looked forward to an evening out at the theater. For those of you who know history, know that the Civil War had started, and there were still a few things to do, but the treaty at Appomattox had been signed the week before, and it was a little inevitable, and Lincoln was starting to think of a little bit more fun stuff, repairing the country, moving forward, doing some other things, and he was very excited. And so 150 years ago right now, Lincoln's preparing to leave to go to Ford's Theater. The perpetrators, the conspirators are all in place, getting set up at this time, and history's about to happen. And I find it, I think we're very lucky on this day. I'm not a big one to say anniversary with something like this. I think it's a little awkward. But I do think something like this, the 150th, you know, recently, a few years back, we had the 50th of Kennedy's assassination. It certainly is a time to recognize legacy. It certainly is a time to recognize impact and pay tribute. And so we're very honored to have Fritz Klein here this evening to do that. I will add one last thing before I introduce the production. Fritz is also on the Smithsonian Channel tonight. Lincoln's Last Day is actually showing twice tonight. I got the DVR set, and so while we're here, that's happening. But I'm telling you, you're the only people in the world that are doing this tonight. And how cool is that? So with that, our production tonight is based on an idea first conceived several years ago by Mary Hagee, a producer in Philadelphia, who was inspired by a little volume called While Lincoln Lay Dying. It addresses the question, what might Lincoln himself have experienced the final hours after the gunshot? It was originally performed as improv by two actors at Independence Hall in Philadelphia. Since then, with Hagee's permission, Fritz Klein took the concept to renowned Illinois playwright Ken Bradbury, who created the one-act, one-man production, The Last Full Measure. As I mentioned, this is the 150th of the close of the Civil War and today of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. The Last Full Measure opened last November at the Union Theater in the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum and will continue to be performed throughout the United States in 2015-2016. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, it's my great pleasure to introduce Mr. Fritz Klein and Ken Bradbury's The Last Full Measure.
Mary? Mary? Something's happened. I was trying to remember. What has happened? I must try to recall. We have tickets to the theater, Grover's Theater, that's what she said. But I prefer our American cousin at the Ford. Yes, whatever you say, Mother. Breakfast. Robert talked of his recent tour with the army. I had one egg, coffee. I listened. I read the paper. I visited with Colfax. Take this message to the Ford. We want the state box for tonight. The Grants were coming with us, yes. The cabinet meeting, Grant. Yes, Reconstruction. Stanton was late. Grant talked about Appomattox. What? What is going on? What's happened? They don't hear me. Hey there! And they don't see me. Grant. Grant couldn't come. What was happening? I must remember. Stanton. Stanton sent his regrets. Nobody wanted to see that play. We came out. The White House porch. Yes. That soldier had one arm. He shouted, "I would almost give my other hand if I could shake that of Abraham Lincoln." I shook his hand. "Mary, where's Mary?" We entered the carriage, rode to Navy Yard. I remember a most pleasant evening. At supper, Mary said, "Major Rathbone and Clara Harris would see the play with us." We were late. They're always late. The band struck up. It was cold. Oh, I remember that cold. She said, "Do you want a shawl?" No, I'll just take my black. I'll just put on this coat." My lights are ablaze at the Peterson house. Something's wrong. Something's badly wrong. What is it? Happened? Dear God. Dear God. The wink of an eye. The draft of a breath from the blossom of health to the paleness of... Mary. I can't. What was it? She turned to me. I was holding her hand. She said, "What will Miss Harris think of my hanging on to you so?" I said, "She won't think anything about it." And that was that. Hardly a eulogy. Cold. So very cold. And the vigil goes on. The leaves of the oak and the willow shall fade, be scattered around, and together be laid. And the young and the old and the low and the high shall molder to dust. And together shall I. Is this how it ends? Stanton. Wells. Quite a gathering. Physicians. Robert! Robert, I'm... Here. So, this is the nature of things? Most peculiar circumstance. Oh, almost comic. My loved one scurried to find the assassin and the cure. And I care nothing for either. I simply want to know. I want to know what will remain, what will be left. So the multitude goes, like the flower or the weed,
that withers away to let others succeed. I hope so. I've been here before. It was a dream. Sometime past. Nevertheless, the memory of that dream remains. There was the same strange death-like stillness about me. Then I heard subdued sobs as if a number of people were weeping. I thought I left my bed and wandered downstairs. More sobbing. I went from room to room. A light in every room, but no living person in sight until I entered the east room and saw the corpse wrapped in funeral vestments. Guards stood by, and a crowd of people gazing mournfully upon the corpse. And its face was covered. I demanded, "Who is dead in the White House?" A soldier turned to me. "The president." I slept no more that night. I had not anticipated this time of waiting, this strange interlude between what? Willie's funeral was also in the East Room. Oh, Mary. I have always relied heavily upon the good advice of others. I have not always agreed with them, but looking at a problem from all sides, that's the only way to see around a corner. But tonight, I seem to be short of company, short of advice. So I wonder. I wonder how others might advise me this evening. I seem to have been given these few moments. Billy, what do I do? You were my law partner. We've known each other since we were young men, discussing poetry, politics, in Springfield. Billy never minces words. He uses a great many, but they're never minced. What would you have me do, Billy? You research matters thoroughly, and you are my man among all others on the globe. Well, I don't think there's any way out of this one, Billy. My friend, There seems to be no getting around my situation this time. No! Don't shout so! There's a convocation going on next door. They're plenty taken up with their own problems. Just give me some advice. I've never been in this corner before. You think I should appeal my case? Billy, I'm about to go before the chief magistrate. Who's there left to appeal to? Oh. The jury. Yes. That is where I've been the most successful, I suppose. Gentlemen, ladies, I think I'll take the case of the defense, Billy. I better prepare to argue in that direction. My fellow citizens, the defendant before you tonight stands accused of multiple offenses, is often slow to react. We agree. And to that, he pled a need for caution. He's often accused of not spending enough time with his family. To that, he simply asks for a bit of mercy and contends that the devotion of his loving wife more than made up for his negligence. Some have accused him of not taking the cause of abolition to a greater plateau, and to that he simply begs understanding on your part, hoping that you will agree with him that he can only toil in the field of what was possible, the cause of disunion taking up all the nation's available passion. Good. Enough, Mr. Herndon? I know. I should have summoned witnesses. They're all in the jury box tonight. Well, there is one passage in the play of Hamlet. It's very apt to be slurred over by the actor or omitted altogether. But I always thought it was the choicest part of that play. It is the soliloquy of the king after the murder. It always struck me as one of the finest touches of human nature in the world. What if this cursed hand were thicker than itself with brother's blood? Is there not rain enough in the sweet heavens to wash it? Where's the snow? I hope there is, Billy. I most sincerely hope there is. Methinks I could not die anywhere so contented as in the king's company, his cause being just, his quarrel honorable. That's from Henry V, Billy. But if the cause be not good, the king himself hath a heavy reckoning to make when all those legs and arms and heads chopped off in the battle shall join together at the latter day and cry all, we died at such a place. Some swearing, some calling for a surgeon, some upon their wives left poor behind them. Now, if these men did not die well, it will be a black matter for the king who led them to it. Billy, I sat there at the telegraph office and read the reports. The first battle at Bull Run, towards 1,000 killed, thousands more murdered, An unprepared army led to war by an incompetent general on the urging of an uncertain commander-in-chief. Is there not rain enough in the sweet heavens to wash it white as snow? I wouldn't put your money on a successful appeal, Billy. Oh, I hold your advice dear, my friend. I would go to you to see the far side of an issue. You spent a good deal of time over there. You knew the territory. In fact, you kept me from traveling there myself. And you? Speed. Joshua, speed. Oh, I'm in a predicament. What would you advise? I know. Oh, I know. Listen, Speed. You gave me more than a home in that rented apartment above your store. More than a home. You gave me your lifelong friendship. Now, what do you advise? I've always depended upon you for the voice of reason, my friend. And now I could use some calm counsel. Billy thinks I should appeal my case. What about you? No. No, sir, you have not let me down. No. Please, don't talk like this. I guess every man can use his shoulder to cry upon. We've always had each other, but that was the hand of fate, Speed. You couldn't help that. I remember. I well remember when your father, the judge, died. Did I tell you? Did I ever tell you how your moving back to Kentucky affected me? I had just broken my engagement with Mary. And to lose both you and her within days, well, it's fine, Speed. There's counsel enough in your tears. There's a sweet wisdom that comes with sorrow. I cherish your tears, my old friend. There you are, Mother. They've asked you to leave the room, haven't they? I wonder who got that fearsome task. Oh, you are my love. But I'm afraid composure's never been your strong suit. Oh. Somebody take care of Mary. Please. She's sitting there alone. Somebody be with Mary. You will, won't you, Ted? You wiggling like a tadpole. Stop! The day you were born and you've never stopped wiggling. You know, Herndon called you a notorious hellion. Oh, Taddy. Oh, how many White House teachers did you run through? You know, your string of disappearing tutors almost beat my record of retreating generals. Oh, Ted. If I recall rightly, you're watching a play about Aladdin tonight, aren't you? I hope the news hasn't reached you yet. So, tell me, what advice would you give Papa Teddy? Of course, attack. Attack, you would. You would advise a headlong assault upon the enemy, wouldn't you? Well, I'm afraid my opponent tonight has never suffered a defeat. Take care of her, Ted. Comfort your mother. Oh, there'll be no consoling in the days ahead. But after that, love your mother. I come to you last, Stephen. Isn't it mystifying? Maybe even sublime that my last thoughts fall upon my old opponent, Stephen Douglas. Oh, there was much to admire in you, my dear departed friend. You know, I once envied you. Perhaps now more than ever, considering my current state. Yes, yes. Once again, you have bested me. You know, through all the campaigns and elections and squabbles, I never once doubted your dedication to the cause of union, my friend. Never. In fact, as I sit here tonight, watching the crowds enter my death chamber across the street, I wonder if history might somehow overlook what you have given to this nation, and even now in the final days to our cause. I think I'll not ask your advice. I already know it. You would advise me to look back upon what I have, what we have accomplished, and you'd say, stop being that morose old Lincoln who kept every heartache so deeply hidden. And then being Douglas, you'd go on and on and on. And I apologize that I give you no chance for rebuttal. My dear old friend, the debate has come to an end. So, now that is curious. The president lies dying in a boarding house, surrounded by the great powers of his day, and he thinks of Jack Kelso, a ne'er-do-well drifter back in New Salem, Illinois. life, the better part of a man's life consists of his friendships. Jack was the better part of mine. I haven't thought of old Kelso. Jack was my first and best mentor. At fishing, he was a master builder, a skilled farmer, the best woodsman in Illinois. But he wanted to do none of those things. He wanted to fish. That's all, just fish. Jack had passion. He said, "There's no one so dead as a man without passion." And I suppose if Jack's passion was hooking the biggest catfish in the Sangamon River, then he considered his life full and well lived. Oh, he had other passions too, none of which ever earned him a nickel. Shakespeare was his passion. Robert Burns. He once told me, "Any fool can make a living, Abraham, but do they have passion? That's what gives breath to a man." You know, Burns wrote of that passion, Jack. He said, "By oppression's woes and pains, by your sons and servile chains, we will drain our dearest veins, but they shall be free. Lay the proud usurper low, tyrants fall with every foe. Liberty's in every blow. Let us do or die." Jack disappeared without a trace. But perhaps you knew the better way after all. Nobody remembered you for what you did, but no one can forget who you were. How did I do, Jack? Did I have passion? Abraham Lincoln, born February 12th, 1809, in Hardin County, Kentucky, died April. Profession? Lawyer, education, defective. Have been a captain of the Black Hawk War, captain of volunteers, postmaster in a very small office, 4 times a member of the Illinois legislature, and was a member of the lower house of Congress, 2 times elected president of the United States. What do you think, Jack? How did he rate? Did you find passion in any of that? I was illiterate. I had a passion to learn. I was born as nothing. I had a passion to become something. And then our passions mature. We see injustice, new passions arise. We see war. We become passionate for peace. I hope I may be remembered for my passion. crowd is growing. The boys from the press have arrived. That's not a good sign for any president, living or dead. But if those passions, if a man's passions are not carried out, if others fail to take up the torch, what? What remains? What was his purpose in living? The war is over. But that is not the end of the thing. The question still remains whether any nation so conceived, so dedicated, can long endure. And it is indeed for us the living. But if the dreamer dies, what? Who will carry it onward? Sometimes I think I have learned precious little in this job, in this city. But one thing I know, that this thing conceived in liberty, the proposition that all men are created equal, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. It is fragile. It is not everlasting. Unless we make it so. Unless we keep making it so. Day after day after day. With the rising of each day's new sun. And that is my as I look, the anxious faces in the street are quickly turned to those of mourners. That is my fear. The sun is rising. Oh, my friends, do not grieve for me. It is I who grieve for you. I did not conceive this democracy. Far greater minds than my own gave birth to that noble idea. I only held it for a while. It now belongs to you. Have you the passion to sustain so precious a gift? I have sometimes been unduly flattered with the title of courageous. The wars, the campaigns, the political battles, my heart, I can only smile. For the most courageous thing I've ever done, is to give my case into the hands of a jury. And that, my friend, is what I now give to you. A good lawyer pleads his case as best he can. And after that, the judgment is left to someone else. voice from the press. They're running away from the building. Scurrying away with that story they've awaited this long night. Some will get it right. Some will miss the mark. And the rest they'll call history. I'm so very cold. Someone see to Mary. Please. Someone hold her for me. We wanted to travel, didn't we, Mother? When all this was over and we could go home. I wanted to go see the birthplace of Shakespeare, Burns, maybe tap into a bit of their inspiration. Now it seems that there's but one journey left ahead of us, you and I. Oh, why should the spirit of mortal be proud? Like a swift, fleeting meteor, a fast-flying cloud, a flash of the lightning, a break of the wave, he passes from life to his rest in the grave. This little book, a gift from you. A daily treasure. Today is April 15. Far from the paths of men to thee, I solemnly retire. See thou who dost in secret see, and grant my heart's desire. Take me home, please. Take me home.
Thank you very kindly.
All right, how about for Fritz?
You've been listening to a program from the Durham Museum Lecture Series on Noon Forum. We've heard a special program commemorating the assassination of Abraham Lincoln 150 years ago. President Lincoln was portrayed by Fritz Klein, the nation's foremost Lincoln interpreter, presenting a one-act play entitled The Last Full Measure. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, April 14, 2015, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Jessica Brummer, Director of Marketing and Public Relations at the Durham Museum, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 400 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.